Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, it is. Nau mai, hoki mai te iwi. Welcome to Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu. E te wiki nei, we are talking about the tāko ki tai, the black petrel. And as always, here to talk with me about our precious native manu here in Aotearoa is my homie, Pete Tonda. Pete, welcome back to the studio.
Oh, morena, Liv. Good to be here.
Good to be here. Sorry about last week, guys. I had a vomiting bug and I couldn't get out of bed. It was nasty. But we're back and we're stronger than ever.
Absolutely.
Yes, we are. So this week we're talking about the tāko ki tai, also known as the tāiko, and it's the black petrel. Pete, can you tell us about the classification of this manu?
Yes, this manu, it is endemic, so only found here.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are a pelagic manu. And pelagic means the sort of open sea birds, like albatrosses, and that they spend a lot of their life living in the ocean.
I really like the word pelagic.
It's a cool word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too. I'd like to be more pelagic myself.
God, maybe that's a bit of a goal for the year, eh?
That's
being
right.
More pelagic.
More swims at Port Waikato.
Ay, marika.
Yeah. Anyway, they're nationally vulnerable. And they are in slow decline. They decline about 1.4% per year.
Wow.
When you start to add that up over the years, that's quite concerning.
Mm-hmm.
They only breed on Aotea, which is Great Barrier Island, and Hauturu O'Toi, Little Barrier Island.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of different numbers from different sources about breeding pairs, but Doc has them at about 5,000 breeding pairs on Aotea and 600 breeding pairs on Hauturu O'Toi. We'll go with that.
Yeah, but we'll go with
the manu
that.
Can live up to about 35 years.
That's a pretty big lifespan,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, it's good.
Obviously used to be pretty widespread throughout Aotearoa, but because of many pressures that we'll get into now only live on Great Barrier and Little Barrier.
Yeah.
It's a very significant bird for Māori and particularly for the iwi Ngāti Rehua, Ngāti Waiki Aotea. Can you tell us a bit about the significance to them, Pete?
Well, because it's the manu's only found in the Rohi, so it's a pretty significant bird for them.
Yeah.
And they're investing a lot of time with scientists and Doc and volunteers and to try and figure out how can we turn that decline around. It's quite challenging. Very special manu for them.
Yes, of course. And Pete's found a beautiful whakatauke that Ngāti Rehua, Ngāti Waiki Aotea have come up with. It's ka hoka te manu tai ko ki uta, ka hoka te manu tai ko ki tai, hoki mai rā ki Hauturu ki Aotea, he kohanga ki Totihi o Hiraka Matā, he hua manu ki te au e tai ko e. Oh, that's just stunning. Pete, can you tell us what that means, Paulos?
Yeah, interprets, soar above the land, O Taiko, soar out to sea, O Taiko, you shall return to Hauturu and Aotea to nest again at Hiraka Matā, and give birth to the world once again, O Taiko. that's a gorgeous whakatauke. And you'll notice in that whakatauke, it's referenced as Taiko, but the iwi because there's other Taiko, like the Westland Taiko and the Chatham Islands Taiko.
Of course, yes.
So they gave it this unique name of Tāko ki tai.
So that was gifted to the manu by the local iwi there. That's amazing. And Well, how would you describe this? I'm just laughing because every week Pete says, oh, this is one of my spirit birds. And I'm like, I think, Pete, you're starting to become, I don't want to say it, a bit of a slut for the birds.
It has raised quite a deep philosophical challenge. How many spirit birds can one person have? And
maybe text in if you think how many you think spirit birds you can possibly have.
Yeah, because I haven't finished on my list.
No,
really,
right, but I'm sure there's
this
way
definitely
more.
Is one of them. I do love the Tako Kitai, the black petrel.
Yeah.
I spent quite a bit of time on Aotea when I worked at Dock.
Yeah.
Loved going there. Mm. And that manu was a key part of the sort of conservation focus.
Why?
Yeah, so the medium-sized petrel, 55 centimetres long, wingspan of just over a metre, 115 centimetres.
Okay, yep.
Black plumage all over except the bill, and their feathers are this wonderful, glossy, smoky black.
Really,
it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, because I don't know, sometimes, I feel like sometimes when you see birds' feathers, they're quite matte, but this is, really high gloss, you know, when you get those, you're not getting the
when
matte.
When you get up close and when you hold them, which I have done.
Yeah, we'll get into it soon, eh?
They're just marvellous. But their bill's a yellowish sort of bill with a grey-black tip.
Mm.
It's got a very sharp hook at the end for catching food.
That'll be bloody handy.
Yeah.
And they've got another kind of special power with their bill as well. Do you want to talk us through that one? This is interesting.
When you look at photos of them, they've got this funny-shaped sort of tube on the top of their bill, and it's used to secrete salt from seawater, which allows them to drink seawater.
They can drink seawater.
Which is a really clever adaptation when you spend most of your time living at sea, because there's a lot of fresh water around. So
So if we're going to be pelagic, we need to have a tube on the top of our nose.
Tubes up our noses and filter the salt.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure we can work something out, 3D printed.
Anyway, they're known as tube noses.
And
all petrel species and albatrosses have that.
So not just the Tako Kitai, all petrel species. Beautiful. And so we've mentioned that we live on Aotea, but they used to be all over the North Island and Northwest Nelson as well.
Yes.
But due to having ground-based burrows, they've been wiped out now and only live on Aotea and Hauturu or Toi, which is bloody sad, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that we don't have these manu on the mainland. Yeah. But can you tell us a bit more about where they live and what they're eating, what they're getting up to, Petey?
Yep, they spend their breeding time on those two islands, but non-breeding time they sort of migrate to South America, congregate offshore from Ecuador, but also Panama, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Mexico and Galapagos.
That's awesome. So not only are they a pelagic bird, they're going to frickin' Central America every year. That's awesome.
they predominantly feed at night and bioluminescent. I like that word.
Yeah, good words this morning,
squid.
Eh?
I think that just means it shines in the dark.
Yep.
Plus fish, sea squirts, salps. We've talked about salps.
Yeah.
Crustaceans and cyclostomes.
What the frick is that?
I didn't know what they were.
Oh, really?
But, well, when I looked it up, the lampreys and hagfish, which are very primitive blood-sucking fish that latch on to other fish. So the one washed up at Port Waikato about 6 months ago, it was still alive, a lamprey.
Yeah.
And they're like an eel, but you see their heads and they've got these sucker serrated teeth, and they look really quite scary.
Oh my god! I'm just looking up a photo.
And you don't want
you
don't want one of those latching onto your leg.
Oh my god! They're terrifying.
Anyway, they're very primitive.
I'm not gonna sleep tonight.
They're primitive. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's what they feed on as well. They all mostly feed alone, but also in groups around fishing boats, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And they also hang out with dolphins and whales when the gathering up all those big big sort of concentrations of herrings and small fish.
Yeah, of course.
And so they get in on the party there.
Yeah, well, no, my heart of my, everyone's invited to the feast. And they can dive to a pretty phenomenal depth, eh, to get their kai as well.
34 metres. That's quite impressive. And that's one of the problems with line fishing. When they, when the lines, you know, they can get those baits really deep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a bit more about that soon. So yeah, they're breeding, they breed here, then they're heading over to Central America for party time in the summer. But tell us a bit more about their breeding patterns.
Yeah, monogamous pairs.
our favourite pairs.
Very loyal. Return to the same burrow every year.
That's beautiful.
They also nest in old logs and under roots of trees and in crevices. Wherever there's a little cavern type space, they'll make a nest.
Yeah.
They nest on Aotea almost exclusively on Mount Hirakamata, which is a cloud forest. And it's the most biodiverse forest in the Auckland region. You sort of noted that.
Because of the Takokitai.
Yeah, because of their guano, their poos.
Guano?
That's what they call it.
That's a cool word too.
It is. It is. It almost sounds like a cool cocktail drink, doesn't it?
Yeah. Guano. One guano, please.
Anyway, it enriches the forest. And you got that beautiful symbiotic relationship between the manu and creating healthy forest ecosystems.
That is beautiful.
And that happens with a number of birds.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So they breed between October and May. They lay one egg. Both parents incubate for
love
about
that.
57 days. Both feed the chicks.
I love to see a co-parenting arrangement.
They fledge after, you know, 96 to 122 days. But they've got this, because they burrow under these thick forests, they've got this crazy behaviour when they return to the nest with food.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, how else do they get through the thick forest to their burrows? So what they do is they just dive bomb straight into the trees and they go crashing down on the branches, bounce back and forth and land on the ground with quite a thud, sort of stand up, shake themselves off and waddle off to their burrows.
Have you observed that?
I have seen it from, I've heard them crashing through.
Oh my God, it just doesn't sound like a pleasant experience, hey?
It's the only way through. But then when they leave, they have to go to an elevated branch because they can't fly off the ground.
Because, is it because they're a bit heavier?
So they need a bit of a launching pad. So that's why...
I love this bird so much. It's just like, what do you mean you like crash into the ground to get into your nest and then you have to climb up to a higher elevation?
They do.
I love that.
But what they do is on that mountain, they... they use the dock tracks up to the summit.
So they walk up
the dock steps, which is so much easier.
Well, of course it is.
And I've been up there at midnight, which I'll talk about later. But and you sit there and they just climb up the steps, waddle past you, go to the cliff face and thus launch themselves off. They're cool birds.
Frick, that's amazing. I'm gutted I didn't see any Takokitai like that close up when I was there, but maybe I need to go back at midnight.
It's
a pretty special way. But getting into some threats for these manu, we've talked a little bit about longline fishing, but
well, they're the most at risk seabird from that longline fishing.
So can you tell us what is longline fishing, Pete, because I'm like, I don't even really know what that is.
It's generally, longline fishing is way more sustainable than nets.
Yeah.
Because it's more targeted and doesn't sort of trawl the bottom and ruin the bottom sort of habitats and corals and all that sort of stuff. So they have these long lines. They go for miles and they've got hundreds of hooks on them.
Okay.
And they bait them often with squid.
Yeah.
Which is the preferred food for this manu.
Yeah.
And so when they see this squid, they think, oh, food. And because they can dive 34 metres, there's a real challenge with being able to drop those nets safely without a lot of bikill from these manu. So there's ways they can do it. They can put sort of streamers on the nets to try and distract them. And it's timing too, because these manu often feed at night.
So
if they avoid fishing at night, they, you know, there's ways of, and don't put your offal off the end of the boat. There's some regulations around that because that attracts them in.
Okay.
So they've got, they're doing a lot of work with the fishermen to try and see how they can reduce the fatalities.
Yeah, that's really good to hear.
Yeah.
I feel like I was reading something about that recently. But, yeah, that good to know. And also, of course, our invasive pests that we have.
Yeah. Like Hōturo Toi's been fully protected for quite some time now, so it's got no predators.
Amazing.
So that's fantastic. But Aotea has feral pigs. Feral pigs go after them. They eat the eggs and they eat the chicks.
Mm.
Feral cats is a big problem over there. Shipwrecks and Kiori rat as well.
Mm, of course.
So there's a lot of trapping done by Doc Iwi conservation volunteers around that Mount Hirakamata to protect the burrows.
Yeah. That's good. That's really good. And I know there's a, you were saying there's a big conservation legend, Biz Bell, who's doing.
Oh, she's amazing.
A lot of mahi with this manu.
Yeah, big shout out to Biz.
Yeah.
And so she has spent most of her life protecting this manu.
Yeah.
She's been doing it for over 25 years. She knows more about this manu than anyone else on the planet. And she helps Iwi and the Southern Seabird Solutions Trust, which is a collective of, you know, doc, scientists, conservation groups, iwi, fishermen, and they try to work out solutions together. But
awesome.
Biz is she's just amazing. She does fantastic work.
Yep.
I did join her for a trip one year, about 2018. We were...
jealous.
Yeah, we stayed at one of the huts on the mountain and... you go late at night after 10 o'clock, you put head torches on and you go searching through the bush near the summit.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a quick training session from Biz and a key message. When you catch one, hold it very tight and don't let go of the head, whatever you do.
So you hold it like around its kind of neck.
Yeah.
And it's still able to breathe. And
oh, still, don't
of course,
choke it.
Don't choke it.
So I caught my first one and I held it in my arms and I looked down at this gorgeous young bird, just such beautiful, innocent eyes, and I just relaxed in wonder. But the next second, it whipped its head around and it pecked me real hard on the chest, just above the heart.
No.
It drew blood, and it hurt like hell.
I can imagine, Gene.
But
that sounds awful.
I took it as a love bite.
Oh.
And I've kind of loved this manu ever
since. And
that's
why it's been your spirit bird ever since,
just,
isn't it?
There's a little... Yeah. Place in my, just above my heart where it's just got in there.
It has, it really has. Yeah. Oh, Pete, that's freaking special. Thank you for telling us that story. How cool to have such a like one-on-one experience.
And after that, we went at midnight up to the summit. We lay down on there and honestly, it was a stormy night.
Yeah.
And all the tako kitai were, they were, incredible. They all flying around the mount.
Yeah.
And they're just slicing through the air just a couple of metres above your head.
Holy.
And then their mates are calling from down in the forest. So you had this clatter. And then you, every now and then you heard one of the birds crashing through the forest. That was surreal.
Yeah, that's
but it was
just
magical.
That's just beautiful.
I loved it.
Yeah, what an amazing experience to have. And we've got a song to finish off.
Yes.
Listening for the Weather by Bikurunga. We had to kind of pivot a little bit.
Yeah, we did a little bit. That's
but,
okay.
What do you like about this waiata, Pete?
Oh, I've always liked Bikurunga. And, you know, she has those feel-good songs and, you know, it's about the weather and nature and... Yeah, so it's kind of that feeling you have when you're out in nature and amongst the manu. That's the way I look at it.
I love it. Thanks, Pete.
All right.
See you next
ora.
Wiki. Expectation to the weatherman.
sends you on your way. And those restless thoughts that cling to yesterday, never be afraid of change.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.